Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. Today we have something rather special for you on the programme. UBS CEO Sergio Ermotti in conversation with Monocle's editor-in-chief Tyler Brulé. Ermotti steered the UBS ship since 2011, making him the bank's longest-serving CEO. During that time, he's led the firm through economic headwinds and a major restructuring of its private banking division with a steady hand. When COVID-19 struck and many small and medium-sized businesses in Switzerland were impacted, UBS, along with the Swiss federal government, was a crucial player in assisting them with liquidity. So just how prepared was the bank for the challenges of a global pandemic? And did their very Swissness help them navigate the challenge? Tyler Brulé from our HQ in Seefeld in Zurich spoke to Sergio from his home office in Ticino for a special Chiefs edition of Monocle 24's The Big Interview. Here's a snapshot of that conversation, and here's Tyler, first of all, asking the questions.
If you look over the past few weeks, it's curious that when Switzerland, and I'm talking from Bern and also with the banks as well, when they announced obviously the package of measures to address SMEs and large businesses as well, it didn't get so much news. But now we're a few weeks on, everyone is looking to Switzerland right now, wondering how Switzerland did it. And of course, we've been covering this story very closely in terms of the loans made available, of course, the coverage by the government, also you taking a risk in all of this as well as UBS. Can you tell us as much as possible, how did this come together so quickly? Because of course, early days, everyone was panicked. But I mean, now we look back, we say this happened incredibly fast. Was this really the nature of a small country and a few powerful banks and a very focused government? But what were the mechanics in the background, Mr. Ermotti?
Well, first of all, I think if you really go back at the early stage, if anything, that, you know, we were a little bit concerned that maybe Switzerland wasn't reacting, and some people were pointing out that Switzerland wasn't reacting alongside other countries in announcing at least packages and the intentions. Now, the truth of the matter is that Switzerland was planning carefully what is possible to do, trying to leverage on existing frameworks on how the government intervenes in the process of granting guarantees to companies that export. And in that sense, the framework was the same. So the idea was, generally speaking, how to expand the existing import-export guarantees provided by the government in normal days into something that is designed to respond to the crisis. It took a little bit longer, but was, at the end of the day, fairly uncomplicated, and that's the reason it's successful. So I don't think that there was any particular other issue other than, yes, maybe being a small country, more focused on managing the crisis rather than the politics around it has been helpful. Banks were part of the solutions because we agreed how to adapt the current setup for import-export guarantees into something practical. For example, by pointing out that the best way would be for each customer to go to their direct bank and not to try to go to a third-party bank where they have no relationship in order to speed up and avoid delays in the anti-money laundering, know your clients processes, so that once the request was submitted, you could also process it very quickly. It is true that banks are taking part of the risk in the second facility, in the one for larger companies, but the one thing that made it very easy also is the government stepping in for small companies and say, okay, for those one, we guarantee, and the only thing that banks need to do is to put their infrastructure available to clients. The fact that we do it for free, because we will not make any money out of it. We don't want to make any money out of this facility. We are just seeing ourselves as the transmission mechanism for governments to put their help into the economy.
Which is wonderful, and it's great that it's happened. But we also heard, we're not going to name other banks elsewhere in the world, but we heard about similar facilities being set up, that the money was there. But the trickle-down process in many countries, it still hasn't happened. They're saying the same thing. Go to your branch, the facilities will be there, we know you as a customer, and it's still not flowing through. What happened in the background then at UBS also? I mean, we've heard extraordinary stories of people going, ticking the six boxes, answering. There was a series of key questions that customers had to answer. And then the money was in their account 6-7 hours later or the next morning. Was this infrastructure already built, or was this something that had to happen right away? Because, I mean, nevertheless, I mean, you still have to approve these things. So was it deploying lots of people working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Was it technology? How did it happen?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned before, it was very important that clients had already a relationship with the bank. So that is much easier. Now, having said that, 70% of the clients that applied for a loan had no loan facilities with the bank. So basically had no debit or no credit exposure to the bank. So it was something new for them as well. You know, first of all, during the first weekend, the package was announced on a Thursday, was available Friday around noon. So we got a lot of requests the first day. And during the weekend, a lot of people in the bank were working to set up and process those requests in order to make sure that on Monday morning, not only the money was available on the account, but as you mentioned, that in the following days, we would be able to respond quickly and de facto granting the lines to clients immediately. So it's a combination, as I mentioned before, technology, the fact that we knew the clients, and the effort of our people to work over the weekend, if not 24/24, almost that way, in order to be up and running. And the vast majority of the clients were quite precise in also in filling the form. Because the real complication at the end of the day was also the fact that some clients didn't answer all the questions in the appropriate way or didn't submit the very basic documents that we were requesting, and therefore we had to delay a little bit. But in a nutshell, I think it was multifaceted kind of dynamics that contributed to that success and not only one item. It's quite interesting, by the way, that as of today, only 40% of the credit lines available had been drawn. So I told you before, 70% of the clients had no debit with the bank, no credit relationship with the bank, so only purely a payment or banking relationship. And so far, the people have only drawn down 40% on average of the facility. That means that at that point in time, for many of entrepreneurs and people, it was important to have the certainty of having the funds in the future rather than an immediate need for the funds.
And I think we have to add and be clear about this as well, because I think you make an interesting point about filling out the form and making sure it's all proper, because it did come with, listen, it was a very Swiss form as well. If you get this wrong, you're also going to go to jail for 5 years as well. So that was also a good stinger to make sure that people were focused as well when they answered their questions. What does that tell you, though, when you look at your customer base and, let's say, the Swiss Mittelstand in general, when you hear that only 40% has been drawn down? Does that come as a little bit of a positive surprise to you?
Well, we knew dynamics of the Swiss economy. The Swiss economy is fundamentally strong. We saw it in the last few years growing well above the average of the European economies and more aligned with the best performing economy in the world. Very competitive, very highly focused on specialization and added value and not very commoditized by nature. So we can't play big. We have to play the game of being a specialist. And so very resilient. So I wasn't very surprised to hear that, but to some extent, the resilience of the economy or our SMEs hasn't surprised me. But I have to say that I was surprised that they drawn so little in the early stage. I'm talking about 40% now, but most importantly, in the first couple of weeks, it was no more than 30%. So it's a confirmation of the resilience and the fact that fundamentally the Swiss economy at all levels, not only the multinationals, because the strength of the Swiss economy is based on the fact that we are able to have very successful multinationals based in Switzerland, but also very successful SMEs and Mittelstand that are internationally known for their quality and expertise. So not too surprised.
What is either Sergio Ermotti's view or the UBS House view looking forward? We've seen the Bundesrat, and there's obviously an extraordinary session happening in Bern at the moment. And we don't want to make this just you're a global bank, we're a global program. We don't want to make it just a Swiss discussion. But if we stay here for a moment, they're talking, of course, consumer confidence is way down. And we're really talking about some pretty serious contraction in this economy. Now, is that a Swiss conservative view? Is there a take that things could improve faster, or is even little resilient Switzerland in for a very tough ride? Or could things accelerate better and move to a more positive position faster than we're maybe hearing?
As I said before, I do think that Switzerland is well positioned to absorb the shock in a better way and also most likely to benefit from any rebound. Having said that, you know, in general, that goes beyond Switzerland because, of course, at the end of the day, we are affected by what's going on globally. You know, we are an export country in that sense. And I have to say that this crisis is coming on top of an existing fragile environment. I mean, you know, if you look at both macroeconomic, but also the geopolitical environment was extremely fragile at the moment COVID started. So that's the reason why it's much more painful. And if you think about governments and central bank intervention are coming with no limits, but they are also coming on top of existing programs. And therefore, we know that it's not necessarily just a fiscal stimulus or a monetary stimulus that can help to resolve the matter, because we have fundamental issues, particularly in Europe, but, you know, arguably around the world, that needs to be fixed. And in that sense, probably the reason why people are cautious is because they know it's not just a matter of 6 to 12 to 18 months before a remediation is found around COVID, but it's also that you need to resolve a broader fundamental issues affecting the world economies and society in general.
When you look maybe a little north of here, if you look to Brussels, and there we're talking about a political context, if you look towards Geneva, certainly from the stewardship of health and medicine with the WHO, we look to Washington, we look elsewhere around the world. Are you surprised or maybe a little bit shocked by the lack of at least central leadership? Because so many people are going their own path. Obviously, many governments responded very differently, different multi-track approaches. How do you prop up business? Very, very different guidance to, of course, the public. And certainly now as businesses start to resume, all kinds of different sectors doing different things. And certainly in a confined place like Europe, it's very confusing to say, well, look at the Austrians are doing one thing, the Swiss are doing that, the Belgians are doing something completely different. Are we missing some type of central leadership, some type of central guidance to get everybody on the same page? Because it seems we're emerging now into a much more disjointed world.
Yes, I would agree with you, but I'm not so sure something's new. I mean, this situation with COVID has only highlighted what you just mentioned, that as an ongoing trend, even before COVID, the kind of call for deglobalization and focusing on more country or regional interest has been developing. So in a sense, it's not very surprising. As I mentioned before, also, I think on this COVID, people really thought at the very beginning, and maybe we shouldn't be too critical in that sense to governments around the globe, because, you know, effectively, it's very rare that those kind of issues are not contained, or that in the past, in the last 20, 30 years, we were always able worldwide to contain such viruses spreading as a global phenomenon. So in a sense, it was a little bit of underestimation of the issues, adding on to this deglobalization and parochial view of the world, that then when you talk about Europe, of course, you know, if you think that last year and early parts of this year in Europe, there was a debate about removing the summertime adjustment. You understand that Europe voted for every country, potentially in theory, to be able to adhere or not adhere to the summertime change. So if you think about coordination in Europe, it tells you how fragile the situation is. So I'm not surprised at all to see what happened, because Europe, in that sense, has yet to really fulfill its desire to be a common project where the true political unity is expressed in true actions. In a sense, the only thing that really seems to pull together Europe is one currency, which is definitely not enough for addressing many of the topics that are now affecting our society, but also the economy in Europe and the urgencies that are needed in order to fix them.
Do you think that provides an opportunity, Mr. Ermotti, for the private sector, for corporate leadership? Doesn't matter whether it's someone sitting at a pharma company in Basel, or it can be someone who is sitting at another financial services company somewhere in Europe, to step up and, listen, not take the role of government, but to certainly offer a level of leadership in stepping up around the microphone? Because I feel when we speak to guests, everyone is really scratching their head. And it doesn't matter whether they're a captain of industry or they're trying to run their small business in Graubünden. It's very complicated for people. People are looking for a level of leadership. Moving forward, can that role be taken by companies of your stature and others?
Yes, but only on a complementary basis. I do believe that governments and the private sector and other stakeholders all need to play a vital role. I'm not so sure that any of them on their own can really rule. I don't really believe into governments alone responsibilities in good times and in bad times, for sure. governments need to have the private sectors helping. You mentioned the pharmaceutical industry. Banking is also another part of the solution, but many other sectors play a role. I would say the food industry also play a role in making sure that, for example, the supply chain is there and people don't panic on the way they react to potential scare or scarcity of food, or even media in the way they present facts. They play responsibilities. Now, everybody has to pick up what they can do effectively to help and not to try to intervene and take the role of somebody else and confusing the other. So as banks, for example, you know, we are happy to be part of the solution this time. So we are, contrary to the financial crisis, we are now in a position to be, as I mentioned before, the transmission mechanism of the government on how to help the economy and companies to recover, to get the liquidity they need, but also ourselves beyond that. If you think about as a bank, we granted 5 times more credits out of our own risk and credit book than the government's programs. So we know that this is the time you need to stay close to clients. The pharma industry is really putting a lot of efforts to give any, in any way, through research, but also through available tools and you know, helping to mitigate or address the issues. So everybody has to play a role. Of course, this is the time where across the board, no matter if you're talking about private and public sector, during a crisis, you see the true character of people as individuals or as organizations or as a society, how they react, how they behave. Crises are great lessons to get to know people and companies. And in that sense, I'm pretty sure that the post-mortem of the crisis will also leave some interesting lessons.
And that was UBS CEO Sergio Ermotti in conversation with Monocle's editor-in-chief Tyler Brulé. To hear their full discussion, listen now to The Big Interview on Monocle 24. We're currently bringing you a special season of the programme featuring the chiefs, extended sit-downs with inspirational executives and business leaders from some of the world's biggest players in finance, retail, healthcare, aviation and more. But that is all for this edition of The Bulletin with UBS. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.